Welcome to the Caregiver's Toolbox, tools for everyday caregiving. We provide education and information on senior care topics. Here's your host, Ryan McInniff.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Caregiver's Toolbox, tools for everyday caregiving, where we give you information and education on senior care topics. My name is Ryan McInniff. I'm the host. I'm also the owner of a private home care company called Minute Women outside of Boston, Massachusetts. And today I have an excellent guest, our best podcast thus far, with Andrea Cohen, the founder of Houseworks, about a mile or two away from where I'm at, and also now a senior care innovator. Andrea, thank you so much for joining the show and giving our listeners your expertise and information on your background. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how your background and how you got into this industry and your professional experience.
Thank you. And thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. I love a good conversation about something that we're all passionate about. So this will be fun. So anyway, I have been sort of, as my whole adult life, I've been really spending supporting family caregivers in different ways. I graduated as a social worker and then worked in the AAAs for a long time in the area agencies on aging, and then transitioned over to founding a private home care business similar to the one that you run. I was saying to you before that I used your company for childcare. So it's been a while that since you've been around and have a stellar reputation in the field. So thank you for that. But so I started this private home care company, and we were, you know, one of the first standalone private home care companies in the country. And I was really committed at the time, even before there was a labor shortage, to having really good support and training for the professional caregivers that go into the field, and really listening to what our customers wanted, which was why I switched over to the private side, because you had more ability to be creative and actually respond to what customers need. So I ran that company for about 25 years or so, and I've just transitioned out of the role of the CEO. And I would say that I spend a lot of my time now really diving into the needs of family caregivers and figuring out how to solve for them. I'm on the board of I'm the board chair of the Caregiver Action Network, which is a national organization that supports family caregivers. And I'm also the chief strategy officer of a company called Daughterhood, which provides circles and connections for family caregivers. And we're launching that into a 501c3, and we have a lot of really big plans for that. So I feel very excited about having the opportunity to both work with the professional caregivers and the family caregivers.
It's good to know that your retirement has been very calm and quiet, and you haven't been too active or anything like that. It sounds like my aunt, where they had more going on after retirement than they did while they were working.
Yeah. Hasn't anybody taught you yet there is no retirement anymore? We just move into the next chapter of our lives. But the thing that's really important about it, and I tell people, is that what's really important to me now is that whatever I actually do, I know that I can make an impact, because that's, you know, what I've worked so long for, is to be able to get access to whatever we need that makes an impact. And that's what's really cool about it.
Yeah. And it's interesting that we're talking about family caregivers, because, you know, it definitely feels like, and it would be interesting to get your thoughts on this, that we're kind of at a crossroads with things where the labor shortages are causing the rates of home care companies to go up dramatically, because the caregivers certainly deserve to get paid more money. But that also means that the rates go up, which also puts pressure on families who either can't afford even the minimums that are now being required for home care, where minimums might have been as low as 2 to 4 hour blocks of time. We've seen those double, and in some cases triple, to where, you know, it's very difficult to get caregivers to go out for less than 8 hour shifts, because it's one of those things where they know that, you know, they can wait a couple days and there will be another agency calling with a 24 hour case or something like that. And it's interesting that you're kind of gone over to the family caregiver side, because there are a lot of people that can't, well, it doesn't matter what the cost is. Once you say $45 an hour, $40 an hour, whatever it is, the conversation's over. And it really then becomes a situation where somebody internally in that family is going to have to be providing care for somebody. And that, I think that is getting more and more exasperated over the last few years, as we've seen rates really rapidly increase for having labor come into the home.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with every single thing you said. And it's really important that, you know, there's so many issues right now, whether you're running a home care company or you're supporting family caregivers. What's amazing to me after 30 years in doing this is that people still don't know where to start. You know, regardless of whether or not you have money, you know, you're steered in one direction, you have a lot of questions, things happen quickly, you all of a sudden you're in the hospital, all of a sudden the loved one you're caring for is getting discharged, and you don't have a clue. So I think, you know, a lot of what family caregivers do is in a crisis, and so I think that's, you know, and that's one of the things that I'm working at with Daughterhood, is to try to figure out a way to steer people to public resources so they understand what's available to them. And then they understand, you know, how to navigate the system right now, because that's really important. But, you know, I think when I think about the family caregivers getting involved in home care, you know, they've always been involved in home care. And, you know, I think that sometimes the professional home care folks don't realize how much control that these family caregivers have and how helpful it would be to sort of get them into the, help them understand what's supposed to happen on a day to day and communicate really well about what's supposed to happen. So they both feel included and valued. And frankly, they're the people that know the most. I mean, we sort of come and go in the home care field, but I think the family caregivers know the most. And then on the flip side of that, though, we do have family caregivers who are just like, I need to get out of the house, and, you know, I'll see you in 8 hours. So it really goes like, that's again why we really talked about sort of, you have to listen to the person on the other end. But I do feel like, you know, with more complexity of care going home, which I'm sure we're going to talk about, I mean, when I started the business 30 years ago, it's nothing that we're seeing now in terms of the level of people that are being discharged home, you know, like after the pandemic. No one wanted, a lot of people would prefer to go home versus then going to rehab. So we, and in the home care company, was getting them way more complex. And how do you do that? I mean, how do you train up your staff to be able to do that? How do you make sure that you, the folks that need the care, get this seamless approach to care?
Yeah, and interesting enough, you know, we like to keep these podcasts very broad for everybody that's listening. But I've mentioned before in the past that Massachusetts, for being as regulation friendly as they are, has no regulations when it really comes to private home care services. It's treated as if it was a house cleaning company that, hey, listen, it's two parties doing a private interaction, while, you know, other states like Connecticut or New York, and I'm sure many others,
California has a lot more of a bar.
So it's certainly interesting that when we bring that up, it the onus is definitely on the family members to know what they're getting into, even in specifically with private home care, because, you know, how do you train up caregivers when there's no incentive to train the caregivers on the part of the home care company? Because the quicker you can get them in, the quicker you can get them out onto a job, and fingers crossed that nothing goes wrong and everything goes smoothly. And we both know that that is not what happens whatsoever. And that's the challenges that a lot of families are facing, where, you know, the onus is really on them to figure out what can happen and what they should expect. And to your point, maybe home care companies can do a lot better in that regard, in educating the family members on what to expect and what is going to be happening.
And I think what's really important, because frankly, there are some really good home care companies out who really do try hard. And I think that sometimes if the consumer understands what to ask, so they can recognize who's good, like Will that, you know, does somebody come over and visit before you assign them? Can I speak with the, you know, with the folks beforehand who might go into my parents' house? Like, if you start asking questions that you know that you want to understand before someone goes into your home and you're getting the right answers, then you might have actually hit on a really good company. So I think, again, it's up to the family to make sure they screen really well for the companies where they might hire help. It's, you know, and it's expensive. You know, the private home care is, you know, you should be a good consumer for what people are paying for private home care. And, you know, you like, it's just like you're buying anything else, you're buying care. And it's even harder because there's so much emotion attached to it. It's because it's generally somebody that you love and you want them to be well taken care of. So
certainly, and those emotions can be, you know, a good thing, and in some cases a bad thing, because going back to setting expectations and working with family members, we've learned the hard way, you know, in the decade that I've now been running Minute Women, that if you don't have that communication with families, there are going to be ones that think that Mary Poppins is coming in, and within the first shift, everything's going to be magically perfect. And it's like, well, yeah, let's hold our horses. Let's put some expectations on what's going to happen in the first couple of days, the first week, the second week, because, you know, I know it only takes you and I, you know, half an hour to hop in the shower and hop out, but that's not what's going on with mom. It might take 2 or 3 hours to convince right. them and get them through that motion. And family members right. may not be aware of those types of things. But, you know,
and, it's, you know, certainly I take that sometimes even a step further, because I totally agree with you. And I think that sort of setting expectations is absolutely an imperative from day one. And sometimes I say to people who call me, because I get, like you probably get, a ton of calls from people because they know what you do and they need help. So I say to them, you know what? You might get this great home care company and the first person just doesn't work. So if the first person doesn't work, then you get a second person. Like, the first week of getting any kind of home care is like this process, and everybody's getting adjusted. The family's getting adjusted. The person who's getting the care is getting adjusted. The caregivers are getting adjusted. So you have to spend some time sort of just detaching a little bit, and if something isn't working, say it, but don't lose hope that it won't work. You know what I mean? Usually we would have, when we had complicated cases, it took a couple of tries. Maybe we got 3 out of 4, right? You know, it takes tries. And it's really best to work with the company to say what you like and what you don't like, because usually if you get someone like Ryan or I, we would make the change that you needed.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And we generally tell people, like, you know, sometimes it can take a good couple weeks, 30 days to really get in the swing of things, because, you know, you know, it's going to take multiple shifts from caregivers for them to know how you like your bread butter. Do you know what I mean? Where all the knickknacks are. Like, you can do all the training in the world with a person's needs and their ADLs and things like that, but you can't train on what side of the sink they like to leave their toothbrush and all those little things that make that, you know, person go from being maybe a B caregiver to an A caregiver that Correct. Is indispensable, right? And certainly that feedback is going to be important, because, you know, this job, it's difficult enough. And I mean, I know your offices are a lot bigger than mine, but it's difficult enough when everybody's under the same roof and keeping the wheels yeah. on the wagon, let alone when the majority of your employees are not in a one central location. That makes it even more difficult. So it's certainly that communication. And I would say that 99% of our issues that we've had, maybe 98%, are communication driven, where one, right. the left hand didn't know what the right hand was doing. And then all of a sudden the house right. of cards collapsed on us that day.
You know, one of the things when you think about, we were talking before about vetting a good company. I mean, a good question, if you really want to get into detail, and it's a 24/7 case, is to say, how does the professional caregiver communicate sort of what happened during the time that he or she was there to the next caregiver who shows up? Because then either they're going to have the right technology, or they're going to have a log, or they're going to make sure that the second caregiver gets there 5 or 10 minutes early. to make sure they have time to talk to the caregiver who is there. So again, if you're hearing questions like answers that like are logical, then you know they've actually thought about that. Because, you know, like you said, I agree with you that so many of our issues were based on the communication. But, you know, if you dig even deeper into that, it was oftentimes the communication between, you know, the two people, but they came up with their own sort of way they did it. Like generally, we didn't have to interfere much. They knew what they were supposed to do because these are professionals. But at the same time, that's a really important part about getting home care right.
Absolutely. And where I say to families, when they look at the price of home care and they call around, and understandably they get multiple prices, you know, it's not all going in to my pocket. It's not all going into the owner's pocket. Yeah. The point being is you need to be able to, and it sounds callous, but you need to be doing well enough that you can fire folks. And if you can't train them up, and if somebody is not meeting the core values of MinuteWomen or Houseworks in what we need them to do, we can train you on ADLs. We can train you on the specifics of what your client needs, because they have this type of dementia and they have these kind of quirks and symptoms that are happening. But if you don't have, you know, ours are dignity, service, technology, and education. If you lack those core values, I can't train that into you. I can't train you to care about your job. And I think what can end up happening is that a lot of customers may find out that when you went to the lower priced home care company, they can't afford to fire that caregiver because they can't get anybody better to get hired on for the wages that they're paying those caregivers. And so right. Part of that education is, you know, the very simple, you get a little bit of what you get, what you pay for. And it's super expensive. And I don't fault anybody for trying to go and get a better price elsewhere, because even the minimums are still more than what most people's mortgages are per month. But with that being said, is, you know, what you're talking about right there, where a very good, smooth handoff of, you know, the relay baton gets passed from one caregiver to another. I'm sure you've had it in your past where you were the third agency they used, and then all of a sudden they realized what the good agency does versus what some of the other right. agencies lack. And you go, all right, I see why the rate is an extra $3 or $4 an hour, or whatever the change in the rate is. And it goes, well, you know, that's where it goes down to. But the other question I was going to ask you is what, with your experience on things, what, you know, talking about how families have the onus is on the family. When I speak with other private home care agencies, of course, there's a lot of competitors in the area. You know, there's probably 50 different agencies, you know, between you're sitting and where I'm sitting, maybe 100 different agencies between where you're sitting and I'm sitting. There are a lot of them. But the other issue that you have is you kind of have, everybody calls it differently. We've heard private, where it's kind of like they're an agency, but they're not licensed, they don't have a LLC, they're under the table work, but they have enough to have a website, a brochure, and they have four or five caregivers that work for them. And that seems to be, from what I'm hearing, a lot of concern out there is that, you know, families aren't able to recognize the difference between, you know, a MinuteWomen, a Houseworks, and the folks that are pretending to be a real company but actually aren't a real company and don't have the LLC, don't have the insurance, and aren't doing the proper payments to the caregivers. Hey, was that ever a concern with Houseworks, or is that something that you didn't really deal with much?
I would say, and you know, you can agree or disagree, but when, especially even in senior housing, because that was like so easy. I would say that, you know, yes, there's a tremendous number of companies that we were competitive with, and you know, and we are competitive with at Houseworks, but the biggest competition was really the under the table folks, which again, like you said, means that you would pay the caregiver, the home health aide directly, the family would pay the home health aide directly. That's like the biggest indicator that, you know, but, you know, beyond that, I mean, I have fact sheets and spreadsheets about comparing this to this to this. But at the end of the day, you know, if a family called me and had a problem with a case or a person in the home, I would fix it. And if the person, who was we were sending into the home couldn't get there, I would send someone and I would make sure they were trained and everything that that person who wasn't going to show up did. And I was paying the insurance and paying the workers' comp and all of that stuff. You just don't get that. And so, the biggest thing for, but I also do tell people, when they come to us and then all of a sudden they have a loved one that sort of goes from one baseline to another, which isn't as good because they're being discharged from the hospital and maybe their private help, they get nervous. Sometimes people start mixing in a little agency with a little private, with a little agency with a little private, because you never want to take away what's working when it comes to home care. But families have to recognize that, like, if they don't get some backup in there, or, that person might have six people that they surround themselves with. But, if those six people aren't available, they're on their own. And, that's a huge problem for people. So, and I don't think that's explained to them. And in senior housing, what happens normally is that, Mrs. Smith will pass away, and then, Mrs. Jones right next door knows the home health aide and says, "Oh, can you come to me?" Or they go solicit. And it's much easier in senior housing than it is in private homes to solicit work. And that's the, so there's this pervasive, so I think in senior housing, like, you have to just be really careful about talking who they work for, who pays for their insurance, who pays their workers' comp, the basic questions that you would ask to understand.
Yeah. And certainly not everybody is like this. And there are senior housing companies that, that do care. But I was shocked when one told me, I met with somebody and she goes, "It doesn't matter if we use you or whoever else, because you're just going to send the same caregiver either way, because you hire all the same caregivers." And it was just kind of like, all right, well, I guess that's one way to look at it. But it was one of those things where, to your point, a senior housing, they don't ask to check Minute Women's credentials or Houseworks credentials. Right. COVID was a little bit different. Some do. COVID it came up, but a lot don't, or at least my experience, a lot don't. Yeah. And then, so anybody in theory could be coming in there, and that certainly opens up the opportunity for there to be some really major service failures and some issues, because the family's bringing somebody in that might, undermine a lot of things going on in there, and it can be a problem. Not that that can't happen with a private home care company that's legitimate like yours or mine, but at least there's a 24-hour number to call and you can complain to somebody, and you don't want to get booted out of a senior housing home either. So there are those pros and cons, but as the costs go up, so does the opportunity for under the table work going up. And quite frankly, that's why Minute Women closed down house cleaning, because, anybody that could do house cleaning and could run a Google Calendar could just do it on their own. They didn't need an in-between middleman taking a cut to schedule reoccurring. Well, Andrea, every other Tuesday, this person's going to come out. And then it's like, well, you can handle the scheduling on your own. So that's where we realized that the people that could do it on their own. So it will be interesting to see what happens with home care. But I think, to your point earlier on, when I speak with Carol, my aunt that owned Minute Women, she doesn't understand what I'm going through, even though she ran this company up until 2000, because the complexities have changed so much in what we're dealing with. And, people were paying her to sit with mom to have like afternoon tea and make a little sandwich and keep mom company until I got home at 6 o'clock at night. Now that's all out the window. There's very little companionship work, and it's usually, around somebody's fundamental safety, and they're not safe being alone at all anymore. And it was just funny you mentioned that, because conversations I've had, I'm like, yeah, it's a totally different business now compared to what it is. But on the flip side of that, it probably makes it more difficult to have your own private under the table worker come in, because it becomes so much more complex that much more quickly.
Right. And the other thing you have to realize, and it's a whole different webinar in a sense, is, the pandemic, mental health in the pandemic, I know people are talking about the effects of mental health after the pandemic on every single population. But if you think about the adult children and the effects of mental health when you're dealing with a parent and you couldn't see them, the complexity of not only the healthcare, but the family dynamics. And then there's like, you know, six different families because everybody's gotten divorced a bunch of times and this and that, and everybody's running in and out of the house. And the family itself, it's like herding cattle sometimes. I mean, when we get a family where actually all the siblings are working together, they like each other, there's a common goal, it's rare, you know, and maybe they wouldn't be hiring us if they didn't need help with just sort of, you know, it, sometimes people, you get in your own way when you have a family that's not working together. But, you know, so that's really changed since 2020 as well, is just, you know, between social isolation on one side and just all of the sort of health and mental health issues of everybody, regardless of whether you're the caregiver or the senior, is just, it's like, it's so big and different. And, you know, the people who do companionship that you and I might want to hang out with when we, you know, get to that age, aren't the same people that really take care of ADLs. It's just not usually like entirely the same person. And, you know, sometimes we would mix it up and put in a companion sometimes, but oftentimes if the person needed, you know, we'd have to train that up, or that's where technology can come in now, because there might be things that, you know, we can engage people with on the technology side that, well, the person that's in there is maybe helping them with a lot of like activities of daily living, they still need to be engaged in their world in such a way that makes it like meaningful for them to get up every morning, basically. Right?
Yeah. I mean, the family dynamics that folks go through and we see, you know, usually those are, you know, the first call we make to a geriatric care manager to kind of hash some of that out. And certainly we've had those conversations with family members that say, hey, listen, you know, I'm sorry, Andrea, but you're the only one I'm talking to moving forward. And I can't, yeah. I can't talk to your sister. She's just making this too complicated, and you're our main point of contact, or whatever the situation is.
Yep.
Because there are, you know, too many cooks in the kitchen, you know, are is always makes it complicated. But then when the cooks are warring with each other on top of that,
right? It's you know, so bad. No, I get it. Oh my God. I mean, I used to say, after these really long weeks, it would be like, I got to tell you, the family's harder for me to deal with. And I love everybody, every family I love, we worked with you guys. But sometimes the family was harder to deal with because they were so disparate. I mean, families are not necessarily in the same place anymore. So, you know, some of them, you know, see like just, you know, mom every day, and the other one just comes in when mom happens to be having a good day. Like, what are you talking about? You know, we used to call that swooping in. A lot of the support groups, you know, we'd usually, whenever we did a support group, or we do them on Daughterhood now, we call them circles. It's usually the primary caregiver who's like, I'm the only one doing anything and no one else in my family is. What am I supposed to do? How do I talk to them? You know?
Yeah, we find the same thing. Yeah, there's one person where the weight really is rested on the shoulders, and then, you know, usually the brother is the one taking care of the finances, which is all automated now. So there's not an overwhelming amount of work on that end. And usually it's a local sister. So what I jokingly say to people that are, you know, are a little bit younger in my more age bracket, it's like, the closer you are to mom and dad, the better chance you're going to be the family caregiver. So if you want
to
move to California, and then you won't be the family caregiver.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
It's horrible, but it's the truth, yeah. Right? I mean, generally yeah. The person that's closest to mom and dad ends up being the one that says, hey, listen, you're the one that needs to go over there. It starts with the grocery shopping and making sure the house looks good.
Right.
And then it snowballs, right? And that's what the AARP has come out with their studies, that it's just kind of death by a thousand cuts, where it starts out something small, and then all of a sudden these family caregivers don't realize how bad the dementia's gotten, or how right. how much their parents have declined, and are underestimating how much actual time they're spending taking care of their parents now. When it started with just a couple hours a week, now it's, you know, a part-time job, and they didn't see it because, I guess, the frog in boiling water kind of scenario. So
yeah, but see, then what they should do is they should say, okay, well, I'll do it for 2 years, and then we have to move mom, or you have to move, like plan it, right? So like that, no one really plans it, because if everybody moves across the country, then you're all going to be long distance caregivers, and that won't work either. So maybe if you gave everybody a different role in the family, so they knew that, you know, and whatever, because I think caregiving, frankly, has to be so intentional now. And, you know, you got to figure out whether or not you can afford home care. And if you can't afford it, then you need to understand what your options are. And I mean, it's going to happen to everybody. And it's not that bad. You just have to know that it's happening and plan for it. I mean, there's going to be days that aren't great, and there's going to be days that aren't going to be so bad. But it's just planning for it is what's really important. And I mean, we're making a decision now. I'm, you know, at that age where it's like, do you move to like a one level house just in case, or do you renovate your house, or, you know, but I'm in my 60s, and like, people should be thinking about that now. I don't want to be thinking about it after my husband or I fall, right? And we do not really have a choice, and we have to move. So like, same thing with caregiving. You know, you should be start thinking about it in your 20s. You know, you're going to be caregiver. What are you going to do in your 30s and your 40s and your 50s, you know, versus fight it, because that won't work, because it's just going to get worse.
Was that a stipulation when you stepped down from day-to-day activities at Houseworks, that it was like, no matter what happens, if I live to 1,000 years old, I'm getting free home care no matter what happens, because this
no,
gets
that. You know what? I should have put that in. Of course I should have put that in. But so I have like a different vision for myself, of course, because, you know, I mean, I was really one of the first people that was working on Beacon Hill Village. And I really like the concept of providing community in a neighborhood and not having to move. And, you know, so I feel like, and I've just been sort of talking with friends who are sort of around my age, saying, what happens if, because now it's too late for us to buy property and invest in it, but it wouldn't be too late for us to, you know, for us to all hang out in the same house. And, you know, that would just make it so much more fun. So I think that's what I want to do. And then I'll find one friend that cooks well, and one friend that loves to clean, and one friend that likes to do stuff outside. Like, if we get this eclectic group of friends living in this big old house, so I have no idea where it's going to be, but you can check with me in 10 years and I'll tell you if I've made any progress.
All right. Well, we'll put it on the Google calendar. 10 years from now,
we'll do another podcast. Yeah, bing me.
No, but I mean, I'm part of an organization called the National Aging in Place Council. It's a nonprofit.
Oh, yeah, that's great.
And they have I'm sure there are other competing, I wouldn't say competing, but there are other options out there, but they have something called an Act 3 that goes through, you know, your housing needs, your transportation needs, your financial needs, your social needs, you know, those types of things, so that you can set a plan together and sit there and say, hey, put it in pencil, because you can always erase it. But like, at this point in time in your life, if you're able to go through it, you have at least a plan of what to do. And I do agree with you. It's an uphill battle to get people to have those conversations. And, you know, whether it's because it's taboo to have that frank conversation with your parents when they've always been the authority figure. Maybe it's just people don't want to admit that, you know, this is a part of life, is death and taxes are the only two guaranteed. I don't know what it is, but, you know, I think it's something that gets kicked the can down the road, and then all of a sudden you run out of road, and it happens, unfortunately.
Totally emotional. Yeah, I totally agree with you. And that's why, like, sometimes, I don't know if you're like this with your business now, because you've been doing it for a while. So like, I got to a point, and I'm still at a point now, where I'm like, even though I don't particularly want to do this, if it saves me time in the long run of something that is going to just get worse, I'll proactively do it, right? So In many ways, and I don't mean to be crass about it at all, because I know taking care of a parent or a loved one is really different than taking care of something else. But if you kind of like just think about that, it's an eventuality and it's going to save you time and energy. And, you know, from my perspective, my parents both died when I was in my 30s. So I, you know, I missed out on a lot, but I also didn't have them at this age. So I, you know, but I'm speaking from the loss of a parent. And, you know, when I was with both of my parents and they weren't well and they died within 6 months, it was like a really bad elder care story. And, but like, I just remember right afterwards saying to people who are in not the same situation, but it's just like, if you're going to spend time with your parent, you kind of want to just hang out with them and maybe talk about where they used to go dancing and listen, you know, what music they liked to. And like, you don't want to be sitting there doing what I did, which was, you know, oh my God, I have to get a lifeline. Oh my God, like I have to arrange for help. Oh my God, you know, like you kind of want to just be with them. So if you can come up with a plan where you don't have to be as involved and you've got like a house where it's on one level, so you don't have to deal with it when the discharge planner says to you, okay, so how are you going to get them back in the house? And you're like, I don't have a clue. You know what I mean? It just doesn't make sense. So
yeah, it's definitely, you know, it's definitely something that it's worth the preparation. And by doing that, then all of a sudden you're going to be, you know, my mom died relatively young at 64. So she wasn't, you know, at 90 with dementia, but down where my dad lives, there's, you know, eventually people are passing away. He's getting into that age. He's in his mid to late 70s. And, he called me up one day and he goes, you're going to get an email with all my cremation directives all done. And I'm like, Dad, I'm fine with that. Like, I'm glad you're being proactive, but are you telling me why you need to, like, did you go to the doctor and it's everywhere? The cancer is like everywhere. And he's like, a neighbor died. And I just figured it was probably a good thing to get the cremation ready to go. So he's the opposite. He is like completely planning for every scenario, which will make my life easier, but it is, really it dumb. Is funny. But you're absolutely right. And that's where I think, you know, again, my dad and his current girlfriend say something again, it's a little crass, but it's like the caregiver always goes first is the saying in their neighborhood that, you know, somebody gets sick and then the other one starts caring for them. And then inevitably they wear themselves out until they go first. And then the loved one is not, is in the worst scenario where they don't have anybody providing any help for them whatsoever. And so to your point, kind of like, hey, listen, you can either be, it's very difficult to be the daughter or the son while also being the family caregiver. And so, you know, as unfortunate it is, you're going to pay something, whether that's kind of with your mental health, whether that's with your physical health, or whether that's with the money side of things, there is a toll to being a family caregiver. And for a lot of folks, that's not an option because the money's not available to do those things. But your point is well taken that, you know, when you're a family caregiver, it's tough to just be the daughter or be the son hanging out with mom or dad, because there's just a mental list of all the things that need to get done that have to get done. So it's unfortunately kind of choosing what avenue you want to go down. And if you can be proactive through a lot of the planning, you know, Massachusetts, a big one's Honoring Choices, has some really good planning options that we always love to give plugs to, because, you know, they're a nonprofit and they help people make those plans. You know, it's worth its weight in gold. And I tell family members that I talk to, you know, hey, listen, you're 55, you're 60 years old. You're paying us to take care of your mom. You know, you're looking in the future right now of what 30 years from now is going to look like. And you're going through the stress of trying to figure this out. If you do this now for yourself, that's the gift that you're giving your children, that they don't have to go through the stress that you're going through right now with your mom or your dad. And some people get it. Some people I'm sure don't, or they have the best of intentions, but I try to remind them like, hey, listen, you can give this gift to your parents, your kids as well, that you can have it all planned out. And there's less stress, less heartache involved, because this is what mom or dad wanted, and they made it clear when they were 60 years old instead of trying to figure it out when they're 80 years old.
Which is frankly why I've decided to not really retire and do just that. Because it's funny, because when I started out in home care, I was like young, like you. I just was like, and people were like, you're too young to be doing this. And I got criticized for like 15 years until I finally got old enough that I was credible. And now, like, I'm like the perfect age of a family caregiver. And so it's just like, and I'm doing it. Like, I'm, you know, my husband, my kids can't stand it, but like, it's just like, okay, well, here's the list. My husband, and of course, my husband doesn't even use technology. He calls it, and it's on paper. I'm like, at least use it, put it on something. And he calls it his death list. And then he'll just make a copy and give it to me. And I'm like, oh my God. So anyway, we're trying to sort of like help our children understand, but they don't even want to hear, you know, they they're just like, don't tell us this, like they change the subject. But at the end of the day, when I'm like going to have something on a cloud, that'll be easy for them to, you know, I'll make it, you know, I mean, it was really hard. Like I remember just calling up the family lawyer. We don't get this. We don't know that, you know, but we were kids when it happened, like we were young and there was no computers. So, you know, technology is going to allow caregivers and people in their 40s and 50s to actually organize this stuff in a way that I couldn't. So my suggestion would be to just figure it out.
Well, I mean, hey, that's a great stopping point here, where it's like, hey, listen, folks, plan for the future. The future is coming, whether you like it or not. So
plan and communicate. The theme to our podcast, communicate and plan.
Absolutely. And certainly, you know, when you're in any industry, then I'm sure it's a little bit easier to talk about it. And, you know, you see it every day. You saw it every day for a long time. I'm seeing it every day. So it's not as taboo as it is for maybe your kids that could not even wrap their head around it. But it's like, you know, when you're in the healthcare field long enough, you see people go at 40, you see people go at 99, and there's sometimes no rhyme or reason to it. But Andrea, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me. I appreciate it so very much. We were joking before, like I just emailed you out of the blue and was like, come on the podcast. And you were like, who is this guy? And I was like, we're 3 miles away from each other. You know, that's enough common ground that I'm sure we'll figure something out. But I've certainly seen you on plenty of webinars and seen your face giving guidance to other home care companies on the things to do and things not to do. So we appreciate that. And hopefully our listeners got a little bit more education today on how they can go about looking at home care.
Great. Well, thank you. And thanks for having me. It was fun. It was great to talk to you.
Yeah, and I'll just wrap things up here, and then I'll chat with you after I stop recording. But thank you all to the listeners out there for listening to the Caregivers Podcast, and we will catch you on the next.